In 2019, I had back surgery. And when you have back surgery, or at least the back surgery that I had, you're not supposed to not only not drive, you're actually not supposed to ride in a car. Now, I don't know how they expect you to get home from the hospital if you don't ride in a car, but you ride in a car to get to the home, and then after you're there, you're not supposed to ride in a car until the next time you have an appointment. So I decided that I was a lot better off than a lot of people, and so I decided that I was going to continue. I missed one Sunday, and then I was going to preach the next Sunday after that. And the only way that I could do that is to trust my wife to drive me up here and not have an accident on the way because I had a back problem. But what happened was our daughter in Richmond, she wasn't at Richmond at the time, she was actually up in Reston, Virginia, she had emergency appendectomy. And she needed some help, obviously, taking care of, at that time, a one-year-old in the house. So Karen took off and went to Reston, Virginia. Now, I did not want to put a burden on any of you guys. I want you to understand, I did not think that that's the right thing to do. I didn't think it would be a right thing for me to come and say, I want to put some liability on you because if you have an accident on the way to the church, then, you know, my back will be all messed up. So what I did was I decided that, you know, one of the things they tell you to do as much as you can is walk. And so I decided that I would walk to church. And so on that Saturday before church, I didn't want anybody to know about it, so this is the best way to do it. On Saturday afternoon, I walked from my house to here to the church. Now, what I did was is that I mapped it out so that I could make it even shorter than my bike ride. I knew they wouldn't let me ride my bike. You know, there was no question about riding a bike. So I was going to, you know, I was going to walk up here. So I walked up here. I spent the night in the church that night because I didn't want anybody to see me walking up here because I was afraid one of you guys would just pull over and try to pick me up, and then I would have to explain to you, I don't want you to do that because I don't want you to have this liability on you and all of that kind of stuff. So after church on that Sunday, I waited till everybody left. I waited till all of you guys were around. You couldn't see what I was doing. And it was in the afternoon, probably about, it was in August, so it was probably about 2 o'clock or so. I took off walking toward my house. And I walked, you know, the same route that I was going back. But on the way there, on a street called Holiday over in Arizona, I did not notice that they had spilled some concrete when they were pouring the drain for the street there. And when I was walking along, I hit it with my toe. And if you've ever done this before, you know what happens. You stumble forward. And as you stumble forward, I stumbled what I call is a senior adult fall. A senior adult fall is the one in which you don't brace yourself. You just absolutely fall like a tree. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm walking along. I hit the thing and I fall. And I want you to know the pain was excruciating. I want you to know my back hurt, my arms hurt, I scraped my elbows and, you know, everything there. People came running out of their houses. I mean, you cannot believe this. It was embarrassing as all get out. But anyway, they ran out of their houses and they came up to me and they said, can we help you? Can you help me? And I said, no, don't touch me. Don't touch me. I don't want them to be liable either, you know. And so but I wanted to just lay there. I wanted to, it's funny laying out in the street, but I just wanted to lay there for a few moments. So I'm laying there, and finally I said, if I don't get up, these people are going to call 911 or something, and I don't want that to happen. So I roll over, I got my backpack on, I roll over enough, I get up on my knees, and I decided I'm going to take off walking. And I thought about, I mean, they wanted to give me a ride, and I told them, no, I really couldn't allow that to happen. I really had to walk, you know, and this is the way. Anyway, there was nice people, very nice people. But anyway, bottom line was, is that when I got up, I thought about all of that pain. And when I was preparing this message, which has never caused someone to stumble, I thought about the pain of just a simple falling on the street, on the asphalt, and how much that hurt, and how much deeper the hurt could be if I caused somebody to stumble with something that I have said or I have done. For I promise you that I can hurt people more deeply with my words or actions than I can with my fist. I promise you I can hurt you worse that way, because I can tell you that physical trauma heals much faster than what can be said and done. I can tell you that when somebody says something to you, and I know that this, you would say, hope that nobody ever says this, but if one of you ladies, you bought a dress that you think that is the most beautiful dress you ever seen in your life, and you bought it and you wore it to church, and somebody were to say to you, "You wore that to church?" It would hurt you down to the core of who you are. Now, you might not say anything. You might not say, "Oh, you hurt my feelings," or you might not say anything like that. But what would happen is that it would really hurt you. And it can cause you to stumble. It could even cause you to stumble in your faith. It could even say, "You know what? I don't know that I want to go to church anymore. If the people are going to hurt me when I get there, I don't want to go to church." That just doesn't make any sense. And you say, does it make it okay? Does it make it okay if I say something to them and they're doing something that I don't do at church? For example, if they're doing something at church that maybe I don't do, and I have to say, "I just need to get this off my chest." In other words, what happens if they're reading their Bible on their cell phone, and you look over at them and you say to them, "You need to put those things, you need to put that up while you're in church." And you say something like that, and you feel like that's not what a Christian does. Christian doesn't look at their cell phone, but they're actually looking at their Bible when they're looking at their cell phone. And you've hurt them when they've said, "Is it okay if you just feel like you've got to get it off your chest? You've got to say, 'Well, I just need to tell you something. I think your singing is the worst that I've ever heard since I've ever been in church.'" You think that really will, I just got to get this off my chest, and I really want you to sing a little bit lower. You know, I actually had this happen. This is not a joke. I had a guest speaker one time, and I was singing with him. I mean, I was not singing with him, but we're singing congregationally. We're on that platform type thing. And he said, "Could you step a couple of steps away? Your singing is bothering me." You know, I really realized that my singing is bad. But, you know, that's just not something you really need to say to people. Does it say to make a beautiful noise to the Lord, or a joyful noise? You don't understand what I'm trying to say? Do we need to say that kind of stuff? You know, and yet that is the kind of stuff that actually goes on in church. And sometimes we play it off as if it's some kind of joke. Before I get into any of the examples that I'm going to give you this morning, let me just read to you the scripture that we have this morning for this. Romans chapter 14, verse 13 says, "Therefore, let us not pass judgment on one another any longer." You see that "any longer"? What is it saying we're doing? We're already doing this. This is not something that we are, you know, saying, "Oh, this is a possibility." We're already doing it. Sounds like last week's sermon, I know, but we're going further than that. "But rather decide never to put a stumbling block or hindrance in the way of a brother." Now, a stumbling block is placed in the way of a believer when we judge his practice of faith. Now, we're taking this into context as we are now. Does this mean that we're supposed to allow anything goes in church? I mean, can we do anything with that? You can do anything at church, and you can do it with impunity, because we can't say anything to you about anything that is done. Well, the Bible clearly tells us that we are supposed to judge the people on the inside of the church. I'm not talking about people who are not members of the church. I'm not talking about visitors. I'm not talking about the people who have just been here for a couple of times. I'm not talking about their family members even. I'm talking about the people that are regular members of the church. We're supposed to judge about sinful things. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 12, it says, "For what have I to do with judging outsiders? Is it not those inside the church whom you are to judge? God judges those outside. Purge the evil person from among you." Now, here's what was going on. There was someone in the Corinthian church who was committing incest. However you want to, they've tried to explain that in many of the commentaries. I don't know how it was. All I can tell you is that I know it was incest. And Paul clearly says that there should be a judgment that happens on that person. Is this a type of worship? No. What this is sinful. And he was saying that they should deny fellowship with those people, that with the people of believers, until that person corrected their action. Why? Because it's sin. Paul is not talking about judging people if how they worship. Here he's talking about when they're committing sin. So in this context, remember, you always take scripture in the context of the scripture itself and then the context of the culture. What he's saying, this is sinful. Now understand this. What is sinful in the Bible is still sinful. But culture most assuredly will change. In other words, culture is going to tell us some things that the Bible said was sin, and they're going to say it's not sin anymore. And unfortunately, so often, what happens is the church goes along with that. And the church starts to say, okay, the things that we thought were sinful, because the Bible said it was sinful, now it's not sinful because everybody's doing it now, and it's all okay. That's not true, by the way. But inside the church, when it is a sinful action, we are literally required to judge each other. We're supposed to judge each other on that. Now, I'm talking about people on the inside of the church. See, but Paul here is addressing the ways people practice their faith. And we have the same things today. Some people will drink alcohol. I've mentioned that before. And while others believe that it is a sign of a weak believer who does so. The evidence is it's the sign of the weak believer who's saying that nobody can ever have a drink. If you don't look in the scriptures very carefully, that's what it really says. It says, I remember reading a story this professor wrote about a group of people, some American Baptist pastors and some German Baptist pastors. They went to a seminar, and it was in Germany. And the American Baptist pastors came to the professor and said, you know, it bothers us that these German Baptist pastors, after we have our teaching sessions, they're going to the pub and having a pint, each one of them. And then the professor says to them, he says, that's incredibly interesting. Because those German Baptist pastors came to us, and it came to me rather, and said, it bothers them, that your wives are wearing makeup. Do you understand? You understand what's going on here? You see what has happened here is? See, what has happened here is that each one were judging things of how they practiced their faith. You know, and the bottom line of it is that it shouldn't have happened that way. So I think that I can say very confidently that you shouldn't bring a keg to a Sunday school class party. You understand what I'm saying? Not because it would be wrong to drink, but you could cause somebody to stumble. Do you understand what I'm trying to say here? This is the way that we really need to think about it. That word that is translated hindrance in the ESV is the word scandalon. You know what word comes from that, don't you? Scandal. Scandal comes from it. In the Greek, it was considered a trap. It traps the believer. When you cause them, you put a hindrance in front of them, and you cause them to stumble, you put a trap there. And so that they will withdraw fellowship, you know, and cause a rift in the church. Often what happens is that they look and they say, oh, that person over there, they don't like the way I do this or the way I'm practicing this. And we say that, and we erode that person's walk with the Lord in this process. And instead of us saying, you know what, that's how they're practicing their faith, this is the way I practice my faith, that's okay. There is a Baptist pastor, and if you don't know this, there's no reason for you to know this, is what I'm trying to say. I read things of what is happening in other churches. I read things about what is going on with trends. I read all of this kinds of stuff. But there is a Baptist pastor who uses vulgar language in his sermons. He even uses the F word. I'm going to tell you that. Let me tell you what it does. It will gather a crowd. I want you to understand, it will gather a crowd. And there are some that are claiming, you know, he's doctrinally correct, but he's just verbally vulgar. Well, that is true in that sense. But let me ask you something. Could that vulgar language cause someone to stumble? Yes, absolutely. It sure could. It could cause them to stumble. Could it cause them to be drawn in, fall into a trap? Could their language that they had before they were believers, and they come and they hear this at church, draw them back into a lifestyle of talking like that and therefore doing the things that they did before? The answer is absolutely true. Let's go on to Scripture and see what it says. Verse 14. I know and am persuaded in the Lord Jesus that nothing is unclean in itself, but it is unclean for anyone who thinks it's unclean. Now, we're not talking about sinful actions here again. Sinful actions are still sinful. What we're talking about is Christian practices that do not include sinful practices. See, for example, there's a need for a renewed mind, but when the mind by itself starts deciding what is wrong and right, we'll find that it will abandon godly standards, because our minds, unless they were renewed, are rooted in the world. And if we're rooted in the world, we're going to come up with worldly standards. So we can simply think something is right and we can be wrong. But many times our thinking of right and wrong comes from our practice rather than from our Bibles. Unless we have a renewed mind, which it talks about in Romans 12:2, unless we have that renewed mind, what we're going to find is that it will come from our practices, not from the Bible itself. The seven last words of the church are what? We've never done it that way before. And where does that come from? Does that come from the Bible? No. That comes from that worldly mind that wants to keep things exactly like it always has been. And as long as we think right and wrong come from our practices, we will reject all that fails to fit within our practices. This is what is going on in the world, especially today. If you look at our woke culture and all of the things that are going, they are determining what is right and wrong, much different than what we've ever known before. And guess what is happening? The world is going that direction. Why are they going that direction? Because their minds are following the worldly practices. And so they're going that direction. Even some of the churches have said things that are very much like that culture that is going on. And so we're going along that way. The examples I've encountered, I'll tell you, examples I've encountered was when I told you this before, but one of the churches I was in, pastor said, let's not wear coats and ties from Memorial Day to Labor Day because it's just too hot. And people came to me and said, we got to wear coats and ties. Well, wear your coat and tie. I don't care. You know, but don't say that it is wrong one way or the other. That's your culture. That's your practice. Practice it. It doesn't make any difference at all. See, in the early church, people only had one set of clothes. If you said they wore the best that they had to church, that was always true because that's all they had. They're wearing what they had. And so I've had people come to me, and I've said this before, hey, we need to get rid of the guitar and drums. Well, they didn't have them in the New Testament. You know what? They didn't have an organ and a piano in the New Testament either, by the way. You know that? And there's a group of people that said that all instruments should be banned from the church because, quite frankly, God made the voice, and only the voice should be used in order to worship Him, to give Him glory. And there's people that practice that today. Well, let me say this to you. What would you willingly give up in order to accommodate somebody else? What would you willingly say? You know what? I would rather give up something that I have, that I would allow somebody to walk in their faith better. You know, too often what we see that happens, and especially I've seen this happen in a church, is that you'll have a classroom, and this classroom will have a whole bunch of seats in it. And each of the people, back when we had those metal seats, you know, everybody sat in those metal seats in Sunday school classrooms, we would, each of the people would make their own little, whatever it is, doily seat thing, you know what I'm saying? And then they would all sit, you know, and that was their seat every week. And it didn't matter if they didn't show up, that was their seat. And nobody could sit in that seat because that was the way it was, and you had that little doily thing. And even when they passed away, you couldn't sit in that seat because that was their seat. And so the classroom gets down to four people in the classroom with a whole bunch of little doilies around there. Four people in the classroom, can't put anybody else in that classroom because they just don't have enough places to put chairs. You see what I'm saying? And they're unwilling to move from their classroom with four people in it to a smaller classroom because that's their classroom. How about, would you change the location? Do you understand what I'm saying? I had a man, this is not some story I'm telling you, when I first got here, a very astute man. He's no longer with us. He didn't go to another church. Well, he went to Jesus as his Sunday school teacher now, but if you know what I mean. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is he came to me and he said, I believe that we need to sell the property that we're in and we need to move to a different location. Now, here is his reasoning. One, real estate was hot as a firecracker in 2005. Do you understand? It was selling like crazy around here, like crazy. He said we could get plenty of money for it. And secondly, we could go to the people that we're already reaching. In other words, the people that are most like the people who are already in the church. And he says, because what is happening is the community around us has changed. And my result, I mean, I thought, you know what? He's got the right idea. I don't think it's the right thing to do, but it was the right idea. You see, if you're not going to reach the community that you're in, you need to move to a community that you will reach. I understand that. Would you give up the location? Well, I chose not to. I chose to try to reach the community that we're in. That was a different way to look at it, and I understand that. But I understood what the man was saying. Do you realize that even the Cleveland Indians have changed their name? They're no longer the Cleveland Indians. They're called the Cleveland Guardians now. Did you know that? I just changed that. And the reason is, you know why? They don't want to cause anybody to stumble. You see what I'm saying here to you? Would you change even the name? Because you realize what we're doing here is that we're trying to reach people, not satisfy our own desires. And in this, when we have done what we've done, we have essentially judged by saying, if you are not like us, get out of here. Get out of here. We don't want you if you're not like us. And we have done tremendous damage throughout the years. In Baptist churches, though I know our church does not participate in this, but in Baptist churches, they eliminated dancing for the longest period of time. And what did they say? We're going to judge you guys. You got to get out of here if you dance. We have kept out instruments. We have said, okay, we're not going to have that. You can't play that in church. And we made worship for the wealthy in some cases. I was in a church one time that was a reasonably wealthy church, and their community had changed around them. And they decided, you know, we want the people to come to our church. So they're in our community. They went out in that community, and they started trying to invite those people to church. And you know what happened? Those people walked into the church and they looked at the people that were sitting there in their hundreds of dollar suits. And they looked at their clothing and they said, you know what? I can't dress like that. I don't feel comfortable here. And they came one time, but they wouldn't come back. And that was the way it was. We have judged them in ways that we don't even know that we have. We don't even realize that we have done so. See, none of these things are wrong in themselves. And what I'm trying to say is they were made wrong by judgments. It's not wrong to dance. We judged that. It's not wrong to have the instruments. We judged that. And it's not wrong to wear nice clothes to church either, by the way. But on the other side, we judged that. They judged that. So we've looked down on people. See, that doesn't mean we've taken the right to the way we practice just because we say something's right when it's not. Romans 14, 15. For if your brother is grieved by what you eat, and that was the question they have there, and we don't know exactly what that was, you are no longer walking in love. By what you eat, do not destroy the one for whom Christ died. Our actions, all of our actions, must consider others. Our actions must consider others. We judge others by acting in ways without love. In every case, we need to think about it in love. It sounds simple, doesn't it? If I think that I'm loving other people and not just loving my own practices, loving the way that I do things, loving it just simply because I've always done it that way before, then what I change is my practices in order to love on those people. See, out of love, we practice our faith with others in a manner that neither causes them to stumble nor traps them. We don't want to cause them to stumble. See, years ago, I went to Mongolia. And I was warned that the Mongolians, if they greet you, they will offer you vodka, Russian vodka. And I've told you my story, and I'm not going to tell it to you again, that I don't drink. I don't drink because of a commitment to the Lord. It does not have the fact. It's not me telling you that drinking is wrong. It's just me telling you that I don't drink. And so I asked, would that be offensive to the Mongolians if I didn't drink? And the missionary said, I think it would. So I had a problem. I had a problem and I didn't know what to do with it. So I asked them, if I pretend to drink, will that be okay? I'm still trying to keep my commitment to the Lord. And so they said, that'll do it. If you just put it to your lips, the Mongolians will know that you are, it's a manner of greeting, it will be okay. I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. Nobody offered me any vodka. All I got was this tea, and the tea had stuff in the bottom of it. I made sure I never drank to the bottom, I'll tell you that. I never got it. But what they did offer me, and I didn't know that it was alcoholic, I want to tell you this, I did not know it, was fermented mare's milk. One, I didn't know that fermented meant that it had alcohol in it. And secondly, I didn't know that you could milk a horse. I didn't know either one of those. And what they do when I say the word fermented, what does that mean? Soured. Let's get straight here. Soured mare's milk. Okay? And they give it to you in a bowl, and they put sugar in it, and they put some rice in it. It's like drinking a clumpy soured milk, if you can imagine. Okay. And it was a big deal to them that I would have some of this stuff. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. Cause I mean, I got to do it. And you get a spoon. You don't lap it up. You take a spoon. And I took a spoon and I said, I put it in my mouth and I said, this is the worst thing I've ever put in my mouth ever. I mean, it's worse than the time I licked the ashes out of the ashtray. I'm telling you, it's the worst taste that I'd ever had in my life. And I smiled and I said, oh, thank you. You know? And I said, okay, let's go for number two. And I did it again. And I said, it was worse than the first time. And I said, oh my goodness, what am I going to do here? Because I mean, you know what happens? Your stomach starts boiling. You know what I'm saying? It's starting to say, okay, I did the third one, and my stomach said, you do that again? I'm going to send it back to you with interest. You know? And I looked and I said, I cannot do this. I cannot do this because I think it would be worse for me to get sick than it would for me to, you know, to not drink it anymore. So I said, this is wonderful, but it is not good for my stomach. I had to have an interpreter for me to say that. I didn't know. And like I said, I didn't know it was alcoholic, and I was doing this. Anyway, but bottom line on all this is that the guy that I was with, he said, you don't want yours? You know, he got through with it. But anyway, that was the way it was, and we got it off, and got it finished off. But I want you to know, I don't want my eating or drinking to ever keep anyone from Christ. Not ever. I mean, even that, even though I didn't know it was alcoholic, I tried. I did what I could for my best. See, my eating or drinking shouldn't adversely affect someone's walk with Christ. That should never, never happen. You see, there are things that people won't do, and they won't do it because they've never done it that way before. And we keep people from Christ. We cause people to stumble. I don't have this on the screens, but I want you to hear these words. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 19, "For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside of the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings." That means that I take that law of love more seriously than you can imagine. That I will change what I do in order to reach people. I will change the way I look at things in order to keep people from stumbling at my actions and my words. I have seen people in church criticize those with tattoos, those with piercings. I've seen people laugh at people that don't know what to do in a service. I've seen people that they laughed when, I haven't had seen this happen here, but I've had it before. Somebody will walk down the aisle under conviction before I give the invitation. And people are looking at them all the way. Looking at them saying, they don't know what to do. I know what to do, but they don't know what to do. I've seen people that looked over at people, you know, when they didn't know that when we were doing communion, they went ahead and they ate the bread and they took the juice before we ever gave them any instructions to do so, because they didn't know what to do. And I've seen them by their, this is all they had to do. You know, they think, well, I didn't do anything. Yeah. All you did was stare at them. They noticed it, folks. Let me tell you something. I told you that in the very beginning. Stumbling hurts. Stumbling hurts. And sometimes stumbling that hurts lasts for an eternity. Pray with me.